Julian Barnes' latest novel, The Only Story, begins with a question. Would you rather love the more and suffer the more, or love the less and suffer the less? The narrator of his story is a man looking back on his once love affair with a much older woman, which shaped his life. The Only Story is published by Knopf, and I'm very happy that it brings Booker Prize winner Julian Barnes to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
It is a pleasure to meet you.
Good to be here.
In this book, you write, most of us have only one story to tell. Do you believe that?
I believe everything that I write. I believe that when I'm inhabiting a character, I always believe what they're saying, what they believe. I kind of do. You know, lots of things happen to us. But finally, I think there's often only one story that counts, and that is usually a story about love. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily a successful story about love, but a story about love, but maybe about failed love, maybe about imagined love, fantastical love. And I think that's finally how we're valued.
It's interesting to hear you say that because I was taken with the cover of the book. I know this is radio, so I'm going to describe
it. Yes, please do.
It says, love is all in the background, and it's crossed off.
Yes. Well, there's at one point towards the end of his life, the narrator, a guy called Paul. He keeps a notebook for many years about wise things that people have said about love. And then he goes through it every so often, and he crosses out the ones he decides are untrue. And there are only about a couple that survive towards the end. One is a wonderful thing I came across somewhere from an 18th century Frenchman, which says something like, love is the one subject on which it's impossible to say anything absurd, because everything is both true and untrue that you say about love. And it has a wonderful sort of balance and fluidity to it. So he keeps that in his books, but most of the things he crosses out.
Let's introduce our audience to Paul. Paul is 19, and he falls in love with a 48-year-old married woman named Susan, and they meet at a tennis club.
Banalely, yes.
After the summer, after his first year of college. Why a tennis club? I wondered about that.
Well, I've never been a member of a tennis club myself, I hasten to admit. But there's something about the English suburbs back in the sort of, you know, 60s, because it starts back in the 1960s and goes through to the present day. You know, there's something about the tennis club which is, it has its own hierarchy, you know. It has its sort of social assumptions. It has its political assumptions, even. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was growing up, I thought that it was a sort of version of the Young Conservatives. They just happened to be playing tennis at the time. And it's also, of course, a place where the generations would mix. And so, you know, if you enter a lucky dip mixed doubles competition, you might well find yourself drawn with a partner who is a 48-year-old woman, but not at all a traditional or conventional 48-year-old woman.
Oh, that's interesting. You describe people in the club as Hugos and Carolines, and Paul's mother thinks she hopes she brings home the Caroline. who are the Hugos and the Carolines?
Well, you know, he's a typical 19-year-old insecure, somewhat contemptuous, especially of his parents' values. He says the one thing he's not going to do is come back and have a tennis wife and 2.4 children, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. He sort of characterizes his generation of players as Hugos and Carolines. They're sort of slightly not posh, but they're names of a certain class in England. Mm-hmm. And the sort of, you know, grass court tennis playing conservative types. I apologize to any Hugos and Carolines who are listening to this. I'm sure in America they're all really nice chaps and women.
One of the things I really enjoyed about the book, and I read through the first two parts of it. I haven't devoured the third section yet, I'll be honest, is you approach their love affair in a way that I don't know what this says about the modern times, the way we talk about older women and younger men, that there's nothing, you're not snickering at it. It's a real love affair between a 19-year-old and a 48-year-old. Describe for me why you decide to treat it in a way that you would treat a love affair between any two people who are the same age, in a way.
That's one of those decisions that is made almost at a pre-decision time, you know,
when
you take that as a given. You take their love story as seriously as they take it themselves. And though there's an imbalance of age, there's actually, funnily enough, a balance of sexual experience, because as Paul says at one point, we were each other's second lover. So he's had the usual first outing of I think what he calls scuffle and blunder with a girl at university, and she, though she's been married for 25 years and has two daughters, has only ever been to bed with her husband. This is a woman of her generation, you know, who would have been married in wartime, mm-hmm. And very often that was their only sexual experience, was what their husbands brought to the bed.
And it's so interesting because it informs you about her life.
Yes.
It really is. That's a really interesting piece of information in just that one sentence.
Yes, yes. Well, I hope so.
What did they see in each other?
I think he sees in her a sort of unusual, free-spirited woman who, of the kind he'd never met before. And she sees in him something that is yearning, awkward. Mm-hmm. He's quite blundering at times. She's seems to be ahead of him, you know, in terms of understanding of the world. That's what one of the things he sees in her. But she thinks he's heading in the right direction. And apart from that, it's obviously physical and. And also, it's one of those relationships where they fall, as he says, smack into love, and they don't really analyze it very much. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, people respond to love very differently. Some sort of analyze it the whole way through. There's a wonderful scene in a Bergman comedy in which there are a couple embracing, and round the back they're each writing in notebooks while they've got their arms around one another, and there's a little subheading which says intellectuals in love. So at one point there are those who you know analyze and intellectualize every single pulse and heartbeat, and there are the other end of the spectrum, there are, as I think many people still are, we're in love, that's it, it will work out because we're in love. Love will lead us where we mm-hmm. want to go. Of course, they're a little deluded, but it's a sort of high-risk, idealistic view of love.
We're speaking with Julian Barnes about his new book, The Only Story, his new novel. You mentioned it briefly, but I want to dive in a little bit more. How much does time and place matter in the stories? It's 1960s yes, London suburb.
Yes. Well, at the start of the book, Paul says, you know, I don't know really how much time and place matter in stories of love, because stories of love sort of happen in an enclosed way, in an emotionally enclosed way. They're only of concern to the two characters. By the end of the book, which in your case you haven't quite got to
That's
yet,
okay. That's okay. Go ahead.
He realizes that actually time and place have much, much more influence. And I think that that's our experience of love, that at the time you think, you know, this is just about us, you know, and the rest of the world is pushed aside, and you feel walled off, inoculated against the rest of the world and the rest of the world's values. And then decades later, you see that actually you are just as susceptible to them as people who weren't in love, and that they, in some ways, they have defined you. I mean, the simple fact that, as I was saying, that they're each other's second lover, he's 19 and she's 48, very difficult to have that scenario nowadays, mm-hmm. I would have thought. But on the other hand, I was thinking of, I have a great New Yorker friend who was an African art expert and then retrained as a photographer and also as a filmmaker in her early 60s. And she was in with lots of kids, you know, 18 to 25 or whatever. And she said it was really fascinating, the change from one generation to the other. She said that they didn't mind who they went to bed with, but they were terrified of love.
Hmm.
Whereas back then, you know, absolutely hoping, longing for love, obsessed with love, and a bit terrified of sex.
I would like to discuss the structure of the book a bit.
Yes.
It's told in these three parts, as we mentioned, we touched on. in a first, second, and third person as well.
Yes, and overlapping sometimes. Yeah. Yes, yes.
And why those choices?
Well, if you think I'm going to write a story about first love, it seems absolutely natural that it be in the first person, and also to a certain extent in the present tense, because that's how love feels. And then it ends with Paul in his 60s looking back on his life. And as you get older, if I may tell you from a senior point of view, you'll find that you look at life more in the sort of third person than the first person, that you can look at your own life in the third mm-hmm. person. And so somehow it going into the third person at the end seemed to make sense. And then I was asking myself, what about the second person? Second person is a very, very strange way to write a book. And it's... when they're actually talking about themselves, when it works perfectly, it can be a tour de force, of which the principal example is Bright Lights, Big City by mm-hmm. your resident New Yorker, Jay McInerney. You remember how that started. The first lines of that are, "You are not the kind of guy who would be in a place like this at this time of the morning, but here you are, and you cannot say that the terrain is unfamiliar." It's a great opening. I want to do something. What it does is it makes the reader puts an arm around the reader's shoulder. It draws him or her into the book. It makes them somehow collusive with what's happening. And it's the darkest part of the book. I used it for that, so that the reader wouldn't be able to say, "Oh, that's nothing to do with me."
It's a lovely story about love, The Only Story by Julian Barnes. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
On Monday at 8 p.m., Julian Barnes will be in conversation with Lori Moore, the 92nd Street Y. That's at 13955 Lexington Avenue.